and wherever you have people at home waiting for you, and ask you the question, what did you do today? Yeah. You've got the agenda, honorable members, and you receive documentation, and that's what we will be dealing with. Resolutions we took in terms of our committee report after we went to Northwest for the oversight, findings of the Auditor General on departments in Northwest. So there you have research documents which will be we will be briefed on. Are there apologies, Shamila?
Yes, Chairperson, Honourable Dlamini, Honourable Mokwele, Honourable Nyambi and Honourable Mohai might not be able to make it today.
Honourable Nyambi and Honourable Mohai would have been here, but something popped up. There's another meeting, I believe, in preparation for the State of the Nation address next week. So that's the apologies. Honourable members, I give you a short background where we started. On the 9th of May 2018, Cabinet invoked Section 100 of the Constitution in the Northwest Province, and the Interministerial Task Team was set up. After analysis was done on the 23rd of May 2018, Cabinet invoked Section 101A in certain departments and Section 101B in certain departments, actually 5-5. On the 12th of January 2018, the NCOP received a letter from the Presidency informing the NCOP of the Section 100 intervention. On the 14th of June, the IMTT briefed their ad-hoc committee. On the 27th of June 2018, the Northwest Province, led by the Honourable Premier Mohoru and his executive, briefed the committee and give their perspective on the intervention. On the 16th of August, the IMTT again briefed us on progress made since 14th of June. On the 15th to the 19th of October 2018, the ad hoc committee did an oversight visit in the Northwest Province for that week. Today we are here to be updated and to be sharpened what to zoom into when we meet the IMTT on the 6th of February, 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock the afternoon. Why that time? Because of cabinet meetings, cabinet committees, etc. And that's why it's on the 6th of February, the afternoon. With that background and short history, I'm going to hand over, I believe, to Jabulile, Dr. Jabulile, that she can take us through the audit outcomes. Thank you. Dr. Marcelina.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. So today we're going to give you an overview of the audit outcomes for 2017-2018. So the ad hoc committee inquiring into the Northwest Government, a summary of the 2017-18 AG findings for the five West, Northwest Departments.
Honourable Members, this one, the green document. Okay.
For the five Northwest Departments under Section 100B Administration. So the first slide, introduction. This presentation will provide members of the ad hoc committee inquiring into the Northwest Province with an overview of the 2017-18 audit findings of the Northwest Provincial Department, specifically focusing on the five departments that are under Section 100B administration. So the audit findings will provide members with insight into the general well-being of the departments as it relates specifically to financial health. Slide number three, an overview of the Auditor General findings of the Northwest Province. The provincial government in the Northwest Province consists of 33 auditees, which comprise of 13 departments, including the provincial legislature, and 20 entities, which are fewer than those in the previous year due to the closure of three entities. the Department of Health and Social Development did not submit financial statements on the 31st of May as required by legislation due to prolonged strikes. Consequently, these audits have not yet been finalized. In addition, the audits of the Premier's office had not been finalized by the cut-off date of the 31st of August 2018 for inclusion in the 2017-18 AG report. The overview continues. The overall audit outcomes have continued to regress over the past 4 years, with the number of auditees obtaining financially unqualified audit opinions decreasing from 10 2014-15 to 7 per in 2018. The number of auditees with qualified or disclaimed opinions increased from 8 in 2014-15 to 12 in 2017-18. In the current administration, the Provincial Treasury was the only department that was able to sustain its clean audit outcome of financially unqualified with no findings over the past 4 years. However, none of these best practices were replicated to other auditees. Slide 5, the key concerns raised by the Auditor General. The Auditor General opines that the provincial leadership did not prioritize the redress of undesirable audit outcomes despite the warnings of the lack of accountability and consequences in the province. The AG concludes that the establishment of a provincial advisory committee by the Premier to specifically assist with the clearing of the irregular expenditure was not effective, while the Premier's office did not adequately monitor the post-audit action plans of the department. The Auditor General stated that the poor quality of submitted financial statements remains a concern. Only one auditee would have obtained an unqualified opinion had the auditees not been afforded the opportunity to correct the misstatements identified during the audit process. This can mainly be attributed to vacancies and instability with regards to key financial positions. Key concerns raised by the AG continues. All auditees had material findings on compliance with laws and regulations except the Provincial Treasury. The main areas of concern over the four-year period remained the lack of control to prevent irregular expenditure as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and the non-adherence to procurement and contract management requirements due to the blatant disregard of key legislation. In addition, the lack of investigation and consequence management was the main driver of the increased irregular expenditure and consequently heightened the culture of non-compliance. Key concerns continued. According to the Auditor General, the Department of Health remains the most financially vulnerable. The department is faced with litigations and claims in excess of $1.2 billion, as well as accruals and payables in excess of 30 days. The entire province's finances will be affected adversely should these claims be successful and outstanding creditors be payable immediately. Together with the high percentage of future budgets committed for amounts payable in the current year by community safety and transport management, local government, human settlements, and education and sports development, place the department and the province as a whole in a financially vulnerable position and consequently hampered service delivery. I will now hand over to my colleague to take you through the audit outcomes of the five departments under Section 100B administration.
Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. If you look at the table, it will show you the audit opinions for the last 6 years for the five departments under Section 100B administration. You will note that Health and the Office of the Premier, the audit could not be finalised. So the focus of my discussion will mainly focus on education and sports development, community safety and public works. So we look at If you look at education, community and public works, you will see that the audit findings remain unchanged. So education has maintained an unqualified audit opinion with findings for the last 5 years. Community safety received a qualified opinion with findings, and this has remained the same for the last 4 years. And this was a regression from 2013 and 14 where they had an unqualified audit opinion. And in public works and roads, for the last 5 years, they've had a qualified audit opinion with findings, and this is improvement from a disclaimer in 2012-13. Then the next slide, which is slide 8, titled Unauthorized, Irregular, Fruitless and Wasteful Expenditure. You'll see, note that I've got, there's a column with unauthorized expenditure, and you'll note that none of the auditees incurred unauthorized expenditure in 2017-18. Then in terms of irregular expenditure, a total of 688.8 million was incurred, of which community safety incurred irregular expenditure of 981.2 million, and that's an increase of 101 million. Then we have public works that incurred irregular expenditure of 1.1 billion in 2017-18, and that's an increase of 550.7 million from the previous year. While the Department of Education was able to reduce the irregular expenditure, they still incurred irregular expenditure, but it's less than the previous year by 26.5 million. Then we have fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The total fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by the three auditees was 950,000 rand in total, of which education and development incurred an additional 30,000. So they, their fruitless and wasteful expenditure increased from 170,000 in 2016-17 to 200,000 in 2017-18. Community safety, fruitless and wasteful expenditure increased from 140,000 in 2016-17 to 160,000 in 2017-18. That's an increase of 20,000. And then public works and roads incurred 90,000 rand in fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is an increase by 90,000 from 3.8 million to 4.7 million. Then the next slide, we look at findings on predetermined objectives and non-compliance and risk areas. So in terms of the AG findings with regard to these areas, for the Department of Education, there were repeat findings on predetermined objectives, namely, the reported information is not useful, nor is it reliable. Then they had repeat findings on non-compliance with legislation with regard to material misstatements or limitations in submitted financial statements, unauthorized, irregular, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, revenue management, and procurement management. The department also incurred new findings on non-compliance with legislation as it relates to consequence management and strategic planning and performance management. Repeat findings were found on specific risk areas related to the quality of submitted performance reports and supply chain management. And then finally, the AG found the department's financial health to be unfavorable, and the AG also raised concern with regard to the department's human resource management and information technology. And what I'm going to be discussing further is that you'll note as I read through the rest of the findings on the predetermined objectives and non-compliance in risk areas, it's similar across the departments. So in terms of the Department of Community and Safety, again we have repeat findings on predetermined objectives, which is related to the reported information not being useful nor reliable. Then we have repeat findings on non-compliance with legislation. Again, material misstatements with regard to financial statements, unauthorized, irregular and wasteful, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and expenditure management. Then the department also incurred new findings on non-compliance with legislation as it relates to consequence management and strategic planning and performance management. And then financial statement qualification areas included repeat findings on non-current assets and expenditure and new findings on other disclosure items under the unauthorized
fruitless and irregular expenditure. Repeat findings on specific areas related again to the quality of submitted performance reports and supply chain management. The AG found the department's financial health to be unfavorable and indicated that the department's information technology requires intervention. In terms of the AG findings for the Department of Public Works, again, repeat findings on predetermined objectives, reported information not useful nor reliable. Repeat findings on non-compliance with legislation regarding material misstatements in respect of the financial statements, unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And then they have a long list of non-compliance with legislation as it relates to revenue management, procurement management, expenditure management, consequence management, strategic planning and performance management, and then transfers and conditional grants. They also received qualification areas under their financial statements. There were repeat findings on non-current assets, other disclosure items, expenditure, unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, and new findings on current assets and liabilities. Repeat findings on specific areas related to the quality of submitted performance reports and supply chain management, and then the AG found that the department's financial health to be unfavorable, and they also raised concern with regard to the department's information technology, while the AG found that the department's human resource management requires intervention. So from the results, or the AG's findings, we can conclude that more needs to be done in addressing the audit outcomes of the province. There were also no transactions relating to unauthorized expenditure, but there was an incurrence of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure that still prevails. And then the findings of the AG, particularly the repeat findings, also need to be addressed, as these are matters relating to non-compliance, and it speaks to fiscal prudence and needs discipline, needs to be enforced. Thank you.
Honourable members, there you have it, a summary of the AG's findings in those departments. I just want to test the honourable members. Do you first want to engage on this presentation, or can we go to the next one? How do you feel? Can we go to the next presentation? Pardon?
We can go back to the next presentation.
Ms. Ndlomo, you're on the floor.
This document on the number, this one. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Afternoon, honorable members and colleagues. Compliments to those we have not yet met. Thank you. Chairperson, we circulated a four-page document where we summarized the key committee recommendation, committee resolutions, where we thought that it will be the best idea for the committee to actually focus on those resolutions as a point of departure in the meeting with the IMTT. Because if we don't have a area of focus that is clear, moving from the report that was adopted by this committee last year, we are bound to be all over the show. And any other information that might be submitted should be an information that is additional to assist the committee. But the point of departure, the starting point where the committee needs to look at is the committee resolutions that were done in the report that was adopted last year. So the MTT, in our invitation letter, we requested that they start addressing that as the first part of their presentation. How far have they gone in terms of implementing the resolutions of the committee? That's the first part of their presentation. The second part will be an additional information which might have been reported to the cabinet that information that will give you more details on the challenges that they had presented on the August meeting, but also that were presented in a June meeting with the Northwest government, where systematic issues and challenges were picked up. But the committee report recommendations flows from all that information, including the oversight visit that was undertaken in October. So, Chairperson, there are three main committee resolutions that I would like the committee to take forward.
Where are you now?
On page one, Chair. Number two, committee resolution. Yeah, on page one, on the paragraph titled committee resolutions. The first bullet, Chair, indicates that the committee recommended a disciplinary action that needs to be instituted against all employees and officials who were allegedly have committed acts of misconduct, a financial misconduct, etc., in the Northwest Province. This recommendation, Chair, you'll recall that is with regard to the irregular contracts that were picked up by this committee in Northwest Department of Health, for example. There was Mediosa contract that was found to be irregular. There was also Buthelezi ambulances that was also found to be regular. There was High Care EMS. They were all under the Department of Health. And so my colleagues in their presentations have also touched on the fact that the AG even indicated that the Health Department in Northwest was more vulnerable in terms of its budget. The controls that were collapsed, the systems that were collapsed, led to these kinds of irregular expenditure. So the other department that also was found to have irregular contract was Public Works with the IAMA Consulting. You remember, honorable members and chair, that this is the contract that, this is the company that was piggybacked from the Mpumalanga province, and there were a lot of questions that were raised by members around this. So the resolution captures all that information to say what has been the consequence management to date on the people that are implicated in this particular contract. That's what the resolution captures. So the update will be much important from the IMTT to say how many people have been arrested, how many people have been suspended, fired evenly, recovering of the monies that were lost in those contracts, have it happened. The second resolution, Chair, also again speak about the recommendation that was made by the committee that criminal proceedings should be instituted also against implicated persons who allegedly to have committed criminal offences, legal processes be initiated to recover or any loss suffered by the state as a result of the criminal conduct of such persons. You'd recall, Chairperson, that in some of these contracts, there was also an element of cost escalations whereby people were paying double the amount in one contract. There is a case where Buthelezi Ambulance was paid for the old name when it changed the name to a new name to Buthelezi Ambulance EMS, the department continued to pay for the old name, the old company, and the new company. So how far has the province gone into recovering those particular monies? The scholar transport, there were issues that were reported to say service providers there, some of them, or most, if not all, were not complying with the requirements of the scholar transport program in the province. There were tender irregularities that took place when that scholar transport tender was advertised. The committee was informed that boxes at some point were taken to the bushes to actually do evaluations. And when those people came, they came and told the officials to appoint certain companies for certain routes. And there was a duplication also of routes that were not in the tender that was initially advertised. So there were additional routes that were also made available, say, you know, appoint these companies, appoint this sort and so. So those things, and service providers continued to claim for two cars while the person is only using one car. So the issue around monitoring and evaluation structures within the Department of Transport itself was a great concern, and it boils down to the resolution that said, are there any legal processes? Because that's criminal. Those acts of conduct were criminality. How far has the province gone to make sure that, as much as it was taken over by the national, these people are brought to books? These are just a few examples, Chair, you'll recall, that we managed to pick up. But there were other instances that were explained by different officials who came to the committee, whereby there was no formal presentation that was made, so we could not document those as official information. The third bulletin, Chair, on page 2, where the committee recommended that compliance with legislation should be enforced to enhance good governance, sound financial management, accountability, and robust oversight of M&E function, intervention centered in the office of the Premier and extended to district offices to improve coordination between all departments in terms of Intergovernmental Relations Act, as well as to restore service delivery in the province. This speaks to the issue of collapse of all the systems, financial systems, internal controls. Hence, you've got this audit report. That is damning. So, if the systems were still intact, if the systems had not collapsed, you would not have had some of these criminal conducts that have happened in the past. So the recommendation, the resolution of the committee was basically saying, restore the confidence. Restore your financial management systems. Make sure that MTT, with the Northwest government, you restore the financial management system, sound financial management systems, but not only the executive, the legislatures, as custodian of oversight. If the legislatures as custodian of oversight do not have necessary information to can engage with the executive on these pertinent matters, you will find a situation where the AG becomes the last resort. The AG comes and pick up some of these things at the tail end. Whereas if the legislatures, the provincial legislatures have a capacity and have information to can conduct effective oversight to make sure that these things are happening, you would not have a situation where the report presented by the AG at the end of the financial year is so much damning. So the other layer of the oversight that I think this recommendation is also talking about is the M&E function. The M&E function is very crucial in provinces because that is where policies are implemented. In municipalities also, that is where policies are implemented. You've got M&E nationally, which ideally seems to be doing quite a bit, but at the provincial level, we have not seen any M&E structures that are effective. Yes, they are there, but there is no effectiveness in those structures. It also raises a question of, because once you don't have those structures, you can't hold people accountable, whether at a political oversight as a minister or as an MEC or as a legislature, because you need those structures of oversight to provide you with information so to can be able to conduct oversight. The other layer that is also very much vital, which this resolution is also pointing out, is that the audit committees needs to get their hands dirty. Audit committee is as part and parcel of your internal oversight structures within the department, and your internal auditors need to get their hands dirty, because such things would not necessarily happen if they do their part and report these things and implement the recommendations that are made by the audit committees. So, Chair, those are some of the things that I thought we will highlight as a thrust of the committee resolutions. Then, in addition to this, we've got sector recommendations, which I do not think, Chair, you'd want me to go through them, because they are a repetition of what we've just alluded to resolutions. Those recommendations are sector specific, but they really talk to what we've just presented. Yes. So this will be a very much fascinating meeting with the IMTT. I know Chair said to us that this is the meeting that will give the direction. But that direction must come with tangible achievements, the progress report in the implementation of these committee resolutions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you to Yolande, to Chubale, Dr. Makalima, and Mr. Ndlomo. Honourable members, the intervention goes through a specific process to bring us where we are today. First, the identification of the problem, the diagnostic analysis of the problem, the development of an action plan for the intervention, the implementation of that action plan. And that's where we are now. Then the recovery plan for the province, and very important, the exit strategy of the intervention task team. Exit strategy is not something you do in 24 hours. It can take up to 3 months to hand over the baton and say, now you go and do it alone. That brings me to the point made that came out. Vacancies in key financial positions. Vacancies. Lack of investigations, right, that is consequence management. Reliable information. Quality information, supply chain management, IT requires intervention, all those departments, and the whole question of audit committees. Are they functioning, or is it just something on paper? That's what we have to probe next week, on the 6th of February, and I also refer members back to this document. We called it the consolidated document. This is an excellent document about the IMTT's submissions to us in that was in June, and then the province captured and what have to be done. Here it is. So this document must be part of your package that you will be bringing with on the 6th of February. You've got it. Members, there is a presentation. Welcome to Professor Plaikies. It's good that he is here. Also to maybe at a certain stage give his impressions. Members, over to you for questions of clarity to our presenters. Honorable Terblanche, anyone else? Honorable Zwani, Honorable Monakiri. Fine, in that order, you will write down the questions.
Chairperson, thank you. You already touched on the way forward, but before you got there, I was just thinking, and yes, you refer to the different documentation that we received. And thank you to the people that, you know, for the presentation. I was just wondering, Chair, whether I was asking myself a question, are we or have we received, we determined now the so-called as-is. What is the current situation? Now, you know, if you want to with change management, then you need to formulate the 2B. You know, how should the two be, you know, what should it look like? And I am not clear at the moment, to be honest, whether we received the proper sort of, you know, a change management strategy from the provincial people and the people assisting them. So that is my first question. Have we received, since we have the as-is position now, have they formulated the proper sort of, you know, turnaround strategy? That is my first question. Secondly, Chairperson, you know, once you are there, and you did touch on that as well, you know, that is about the implementation and the implementation plan, and you know, I'm also not sure whether, well, I am not very comfortable that, you know, we have a proper, you know, implementation plan from them. You know, and at a later stage, obviously, as you said, you know, to hand over the baton. That is just questions that I have in my mind. You know, it's obviously good that, you know, the possible, you know, departmental steps and criminal action that needs to be taken, that we address that and that people work on that, and, you know, but I think this turnaround strategy and the implementation thereof is key to me for, you know, to bring about change. Thank you, Chairperson.
The presentations is giving us an appetite for the meeting of the 6th of February. And what you've just done is actually summarize what we must zoom into that afternoon. That's what they did preparing this documentation. Obuswani?
Chairperson, I'm going to comment very shortly because the gist of what we seek to find out really will be heard on the meeting of the 6th when we meet with the IMTT. Nonetheless, one would like to comment on the audit findings of the affected departments. That obviously it is quite evident that there is no management will to ensure that the issues that have been raised by the AG are attended by the various departments. And one would like to know from the IMTT as to what is it that is going to be done in that regard. Because the AG keeps on saying repeated findings. Over the years, there has been these findings, and they've not been attended. Maybe to address that will be part and parcel of their turnaround strategy, I'm not sure. But it is quite concerning that there doesn't seem to be any will on the part of management to ensure that these issues are addressed. The issue that was raised also as part of the committee resolutions, the issue of consequence management, is an issue that maybe will get feedback from the IMTT as to, of those officials that have been found wanting or have transgressed the law, compliance, and so on, what is happening with them? What action has begun to be taken to discipline them? But it is quite striking that Department of Finance is the only department that has got a clean audit, but they can't actually cascade that skill to other sister departments and train them if they require training, so that there is improvement as they submit their audit statements. Submission of misstatements also is another issue that is a bit of a problem with regard to the audit findings. Well, Honorable Tele Blanche has spoken about the turnaround strategy, Chairperson. I just hope that the copy of those strategies that are going to be used to turn the situation around would also be given to us, so that we can be able to monitor that this is what you said is going to be turning around, or you are turning around, and be able to use that documentation also to make a follow-up on our part as the body responsible for the intervention. Thank you, Chair.
Coming out of that input by the Honourable Zwani is how sustainable is the intervention post the intervention, after the intervention? What's happening then? Honourable Monakiri?
Chair, thank you very much. And also thanks for the presentations as made by our officials. They are quite enlightening and empowering as far as preparing us for the meeting of the 6th is concerned. I thought they have indeed been able to lift the issues that we need to raise in that meeting. What I just want to check is as to whether indeed these resolutions, the ones that are summarized in the document, have been sent to the task team, IMTT, so that when they come, they are ready to present, to respond, you know, on the implementation of this resolution. So I just want to check that part. But also, my understanding is that the resolutions as here captured are not changed in any way. I hope they reflect exactly what we resolved as this committee. The reason why I'm raising this, I see there's one where we are saying there's a stronger need to improve under health, I think 3.1.2, there is a stronger need to improve the public healthcare system in South Africa. I'm not very sure whether when we came up with this, did we want them to do something, start doing something about this in the Northwest or what, or we just lift it up for noting by the task team. But also that the next bullet, it says due to lack of maintenance, there was a need to stop building new facilities and focus on maintaining the existing facilities. No? That point, I'm not very sure as to whether we were sort of emphatic that indeed that is what should happen as far as Northwest is concerned, or whether we wanted to say that there is a need for a balance to be struck between building new facilities and also maintaining the existing ones. No? So I'm just saying I hope we have not necessarily changed the resolutions. No? But for sure, there's nothing wrong in the meeting in raising the issues in the manner I'm actually proposing, so that we also get that that feedback from their side. If I'm not mistaken, in one of the meetings that we had with the interministerial task team, they did present an action plan, a plan of action in terms of how they were going to go about addressing the weaknesses that they have actually identified. And I thought as they come to present, for sure they will talk to that action plan as to how far are they. I think they did present some action plan. So I'm saying as they come on the 6th, we need to alert them to come really prepared to present on how far have they gone in ensuring that that action plan is actually implemented. On the outcomes of the audit, my understanding is that this relates to the period prior to the intervention in the main. And for us, what should be of interest is what is it that the intervention is actually doing to ensure that these weaknesses, as identified by the AG, are addressed. Are they doing something about it? And also indeed respond, you know, to the issues that AG has actually highlighted in the report. I'm saying, for sure, hopefully when they come, they are going to talk to that, you know, not necessarily to blame them as the interministerial task team that they have not done anything, because the intervention was in the second half of last year, you know, calendar year. So They have just moved in. They are some few months old in the Northwest. And in that period, the AG has released this report, you know. So we want them to react to the report and assure us that they are aware and they are going to do something about it. I think that will be my own understanding. Sure.
Thank you, Honorable Monakedi, for those valuable remarks you made. On the 6th of February, it will be nearly 5 months since we engaged, since August, with IMTT. So they had enough time to implement the action plan, but Shamila will convey this message to the Director General of DME, Ms. Pofu, to address us on the action plan, but progress made since we last met on the 16th of August, including our recommendations we made in our report, which they received. I think a week after we submitted the table, the report in the House, they received it. So there was ample time to deal with that. I'm handing over to the presenters. Are there inputs you want to make on the remarks?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Chair, I would first deal with the issue turnaround strategy and implementation plan, which I think, Chair, you have partly dealt with. If you look at the document that the Chairperson has referred to, which was shared with members prior to the oversight visit, that document consolidates all the input. The first input, which was made by the Northwest government in June, sets out their own interventions, their own initiatives that they would be undertaking to address the challenges that they had picked up during the diagnosis. That is part one. The part two, the meeting in August with the IMTT. IMTT also had its own, in that same report, had its own key findings and proposed interventions. So those two phases are consolidated in that report, and therefore the progress report that will be given by the IMTT will have to also to cover that, to say how far are those have gone. The third layer was the oversight visit by the committee. Now, that's when we started generating the committee resolutions, committee recommendations, because the oversight then gave the committee the verification, the opportunity to verify what has been said by these reports. But the turnaround strategy, the implementation plan, was tabled before the committee went on oversight. That is why. The second question by Honorable Zwane. On the audit findings, looking at the timing of the intervention, which happened during the year, and the audit process had already, yes, kicked in as well, you're bound to have a repetition of what has been reported in the report of the IMTT before this committee and what the AG is also picking up, because the period is almost the same. Now, when it comes to the response to the AG's findings, the province has a responsibility. Those departments that are affected by the audit findings have a responsibility to come up with what we call improvement audit plans, which might not be part of the IMTT report that was submitted to us, but it's a new plan that emanates from the audit findings as presented by the AG to them. But it should not differ very much from what the IMTT and the province needed to do to respond to the situation. So those plans are tabled in the before the portfolio committees, together with the annual performance plans and strategic plans, to say how are the department intending responding to all these challenges that are picked up by the team. If the committee requires those plans to be submitted, it will also be helpful. because we then start to assess the synergy between the audit improvement plans vis-a-vis what the IMTT and the province itself in the intervention proposed to implement. Because there should be no disjuncture there. Because our plans that seek to fight were in the same problem. I'm not sure if that answer is clear. What action has been taken on irregular contract? I think that's the question that can be responded to by the IMTT, Yolanda. It's part of the progress report that we are all anticipating to actually see. The turnaround strategy question has been dealt with. The chair is also raising a point of how sustainable is the intervention, which is very much important because some lessons have been learned in the previous interventions to say how do you exit the intervention. Do you go there, come in there, do whatever that you want to do within a year, and then after that you pull out? It's important, which I think it takes us back now to what Honorable LeBrand is also raising to say there must be a strategy of exiting the intervention so that you don't just let everything fall apart or you just move away from the province and people say, oh, okay, no, these guys are gone, so we can start doing our own thing. So there must be a strategy that is being presented by the entity also to say, this is how we intend handing over this thing to the provincial government. There are strides that have been made. A, B, C, and D has been resolved. Now, we're at a point where now we think that we can hand over this thing. This is how we think we can hand it over. So I think that is important to be also highlighted during that IMTT meeting. Honorable Monaketi, the resolutions have not been tampered with of the report. However, the two resolutions that recommendations that we are picking up were recommendations that members felt in the committee that it began to be a general trend that health departments are facing a budget problem. Now, when you are faced with budget problems, you still continue to build new hospitals and clinics, and thereafter we need to maintain those hospitals. Meanwhile, you are unable to maintain the existing ones. What do you do? So it's a question of making choices. Resources are limited. The needs and wants are unlimited. So then the committee then deliberated and said, I think it's ideal for now that the department in general, because this is a trend in also in other provinces that has been picked up in a different oversight visit. Because sometimes you need not to focus narrowly on the province or on one department. If that trend, that pattern has been picked up in also in other provinces and other departments, you've got to send a strong message that, look, there's a need for this to happen across. So then the committee felt that there's a need for building new hospitals to actually come to a stop and maintain the existing infrastructure and see how it goes. Because you then have a situation where existing infrastructure is suffering because you are building new. And those new that you are building are not being maintained, but you continue to build. So that was the view. The challenges around the health sector, again, boils back to the issue of resources. Health departments are faced with budget issues. There are issues of claims that are being raised in different provinces. KZN issues of medical legal claim are beginning to crop up, and they are beginning to swallow the limited budget that health departments have got. Gauteng as well, Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, Northwest. So. I think the committee took an advantage that because there is a national department present, it was present in that engagement, let it make a recommendation that will also be elevated to a national department to say, how about you look at the health challenges across? Because I can tell you, Northwest is not immune. The problems that we're picking up in Northwest are not immune from other provinces. It's just that now there's an intervention. But if you were to take the same intervention, shift it to Gauteng, shift it to Eastern Cape, to Limpopo, you would see it's the same problems. How do you see that? You see that when you assess all these audit findings for different provinces, the repeat findings in almost all provinces, same findings, common problems, contract problems, project management problems, are almost the same issue. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will hand over to my colleagues too. So.
Yes, please. No, it's just it's a concern, and it's something that I'm grappling with sitting here in terms of the action plan that was presented. So we had actually two action plans. We had the IMTT with their diagnostic report that had the diagnosis and the interventions that they were going to implement, and then we had the Northwest Province, and they had some intervention plans as well. So I'd like to get an explanation from both the IMT and the provincial government when we do meet with them again. How do those two plans interface? Because you can't have a set of interventions by the IMT and a set of interventions that was being led by the Premier of the Northwest Province, and you don't see any connection, because some of the interventions or problematic areas might be similar, but there might be things on the intervention plan on the IMT that doesn't speak to some of the stuff that has been identified by the Northwest Provincial departments. So that's just something that I'm putting forward to the committee, that you might want to interrogate the IMT further about.
This is where the memorandum of understanding kicks in, that was signed in the beginning when the section 100 was invoked. In the case of Limpopo, the MOU was signed at the end, and it was a very difficult exercise in Limpopo. Here's a bit better, so they can respond to that. I want to give Professor Blykes the opportunity also to make an input, if he wants to.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to all the members. I thought that I've read this report last night on the flight, and I thought there's a number of observations that I wanted to raise, because it seems to be, and I'm just listening to what the staff is saying, it seems to be a reference point for next week's meeting for members in terms of informing members about rehashing some of the issues for the members. And I thought one of the key things that needs to be looked at in, I'm talking about this one, this written one which you spoke to, Telalani. I did a typical FFC assessment, and I get documents on the staff to make sure that we're telling the right story, you know. The one thing that I thought it needs to be looked at is the reference to governance challenges is actually reductionist in terms of the intervention. Because if you talk about governance, you're going to talk about the old question about leadership and management of the system, and the political guidance that's given to the system, and how political and the technical and the executive level of the province has been governed. What in reality is that, otherwise you're creating a parallel reality. The reality is that the intervention is based on governance, financial accounting and financial management, because the two is distinctly different. Accounting has got to do with how you count spending the spending of money and making sure you spend money in terms of the rules. Management, financial management has got to do with the budget, how you budget and the ability of appropriately budgeted. So there's a financial accounting and financial management issue. There's a service delivery issue. And then there's obviously the failure of systems. Now, all of that as Evoke 600. And I thought that probably this is an issue of style, but I think it needs to be fixed, if you don't mind me saying that. If you say it's been observed that there's governance challenges, it's already been quite harsh, but just the way I read stuff. Observed, there wasn't an observing of these collapses. There was an early warning system that actually detected the overheating on the financial system, the overheating in the financial accounting part of it, the collapse of service delivery that didn't happen. So it was detected through the early warning system, which in sense actually give credence to on the one hand, you acknowledging there's a national system that looks at what's happening in the province, especially when it comes to the BAS and the other procurement systems. But you given the acknowledgement that the provincial system, because of the Walker system that they have, which is an old legacy problem. During my days at the Treasury, we were like trying to fight this thing because you can't see, because in the system where you sit at the Treasury, you can actually see what's going, how the money is moving in other PMG accounts. So the Northwest is quite something which that nut, somebody must find a way or whoever to break that nut of, you can see in other provinces, but you can't always see in the Northwest province. The systems issue. So I thought that's an important point to make. And then I thought, which is one of the things that just came up now, but also in the session, there is a distinctive difference, and I thought Pelelani would have helped in this report to draw the distinctive difference between Section 100A, what it is actually about. And obviously the departments are there, but it's almost like a regurgitation of what is Section 1A, because Section 1B is something different. So there's a need to draw the distinctive difference so that when your members engage with the IMTT, you can't engage with the IMTT as if somebody that has some department that made the intervention in Section 1A, you deal with them as if they're Section 1B, and vice versa. Because otherwise you're treating everybody the same, and that's why you had this fallout in a way with the education department, where they raise a different issue of their performance on matric results, and they also in Section 100, you know, where matric results is not a measure of determining whether your systems are collapsing or not. But I thought that the distinctive difference is critical because it provides a different window as to Section 1A, how do you deal with your interaction with Department of Finance? That whole long name to the Department of Local Government and Human Settlements, which is Section 1A, as opposed to Section 1B, where it's the Office of the Premier, Safety and Transport. So it's different implications. And it just helps, because otherwise it also creates that confusion between members, because the net effect is different of the section interventions. So I thought that is one of the points that I picked up. And then a key thing, a structural issue which I thought is important is I don't know the language convention in Parliament or in the NCOP in particular. Because when I listened to the tabling of the report, it was almost like a resolution. But in your document, you talk about the committee recommended. Two distinct differences. Did you resolve or did you recommend? And I'm just raising it because a resolve seems to have a greater parliamentary authority to it, to what needs to be done, as opposed to you've recommended. I might have it wrong here. The other thing which I thought is quite critical, that by the chief of Pelelani and others, that when departments are in one provincial administration, you don't talk about intergovernmental coordination, because they're all in the one government. It's a provincial government. You talk about interdepartmental coordination. But this is an issue for record, because it's the coordination Because you're very clear it's a coordination between the departments within the province. So it's not intergovernmental, they're in a one governmental, in a one government system. The other point that I thought is what I thought needs to help the thinking, and it's the issue of delegation of functions. Now, with a delegation of functions, it doesn't necessarily mean delegation of authority. And it seems that there's a view that when is the delegation of function, delegation of authority, two goes with each other. It doesn't have to be like that. Because you can delegate the function, but the decision-making still sits at the center or in a district office. But the function sits there. And that's quite a complicated issue because the way it's been expressed is as if it's going to yield any efficiencies. Because sometimes delegation of functions doesn't necessarily yield efficiencies. Sometimes centralization of functions doesn't yield efficiencies. It's got to do with how the systems are put together to be able to do that. Then there's a specific point on health. When you're talking health on infrastructure, you have two types of infrastructure. And I think it will help to give clarity to it. There's the build, like buildings, BLT, B-L-U-L-T, environment. And then there's infrastructure with regard to medical equipment. Especially in wards, we refer to that as health infrastructure. In wards, those machines, it's all got to do with the infrastructure and that. So it would be useful to draw a distinction between it, otherwise you can talk about anything. Then the issue of the vandalizing of public equipment and stuff, it's not an opportunity cost. Opportunity cost got to do, if you build it, this is the opportunity it's going to provide. The vandalization is going to do with the social cost. So you need to change that. It needs to be changed up from opportunity cost to social cost, because when people break schools and burn schools, it's the social cost of the community, it's the social cost of the state. And then we need to reinvest, to rebuild and refix those things. So I think that needs to be fixed in there. I thought there's a couple of statements that would help so it doesn't become too sweeping. I thought the one thing that I listened very carefully in that school meeting was that the issue was not about final route verification, the routes. The issue was about verifying the routes that the bus drives from the depot to the schools. Remember that one where it's 15 kilometers versus, I can't remember the number that was given at the time, was 15 versus 100 and something kilometers. Remember that one? So it was a verification of that bus route for the school children to be picked up so that the cost reflects that. And I thought the cost, the route and the route verification and the pricing of that route was the key issue that needed to be looked at. And with that came the issue about the contracting and contractual management. So the point that's made that a new contract letter needs to be done, it's actually incorrect. What needs to be done is that the contract needs to be verified. The route needs to be verified. People need to get back into the evidence of what the route is, how long the route is. And then based on how long the route needs to be priced and then costed. And then based on that, you then need to accrue the money, get the money back from whoever has managed to get for 15 kilometers paid. I can't remember the right number, sorry. But 15 relative to, I know it was 100 that was claimed, more than 100 that was claimed, which was wrong. So that needs to be done. So there's a simple mathematical issue of route claimed for years or for months versus the amount paid versus the amount that actually should be paid. So that's the costing and pricing that needs to happen. And then the issue that you don't do a new contract just a new contract for any supplier that has won a contract as a procurement is the procurement specifications. Now, I don't know whether but the point I'm making, in the contract that you sign with the supplier, the specification of the tender must be in the contract. So that you don't get into a new, otherwise it's going to be charged with, you're also transgressing your own rules as a government. So there's a need to make sure that the contract speaks to the procurement specifications, it speaks to the PFMA regulatory issues of payment and payment schedules, and it speaks to the legislation around that. And then I thought the issue that you I don't know, it's probably just a point of casuistry between what is the way to do it, casuistry, is that you talk about remedial action. I thought it was, you all were on this two trips or so a week. You talk about interventions to fix. And question is, what were the interventions undertaken in terms of the intervention plan to fix it? Because when you deal with Section 1B, you talk about what are the remedial actions to be taken. But when you talk about Section 1A, it's hardcore interventions to fix the systems. So I thought it's just a need to think about whether the phraseology is correct there. And then on the point that you're making on consequent management, I think we need to be careful, because I'm not picking with Pelalani on this. You said that you need to also ask how many people were arrested. Remember that point? Sorry to add
that. That point came out from members.
Right, okay.
It came from the members.
Okay. Yeah. Now, you
specific Honorable Motla Shuping. Yeah.
The issue is because we're dealing with the sub-politic, it's progress. You need to get progress. And my advice would be, you need to get progress on criminal law proceedings undertaken. Okay? Because some of these things, I can't talk about the cases that I'm dealing with, but it can take quite some time. So because I don't know, the legal people will say to you, the accused that partum thing. I can't remember what they call it, but the accused has a right to respond to being accused. So the criminal procedures are quite detailed in terms of the Constitution, but also in terms of the Criminal Procedures Act. So I would rather say that the key thing under consequence management is criminal proceedings as one area. Update on that. And the other one is disciplinary and labor law proceedings undertaken. And then the third one is civil claims proceedings undertaken. That would, for me, help the committee in terms of looking at consequence management. Because then it also helps to not, because consequence management can be issues about accountability, but I don't think you want to know who's accountable to that too, because that's a governance issue which you can resolve. You want to know what action have you actually taken. The last two points, see, I thought the point that one of the staff members raised, and Pelalani raised it again, there seems to be a June 2018, the provincial government intervention, and they came to talk to you about the administration. But the truth of the matter is the provincial government is not in charge of the administration. Because the constitutional section is quite clear. They might be still sitting there as MECs in that. But the administration is the responsibility of a national government and national government interaction. So I don't know what value you're going to add to that, but it's something that needs to be thought about. But it's clear that there's a need to look at that. Then I thought that in terms of the flow of the intervention plan, because we read through it and the staff helped to think through it, there seems to be key areas that there's the administrative intervention, there's a service delivery intervention that was raised, there's the financial accounting and management intervention, there's the human resource intervention management, and there I've raised the disciplinary, the criminal, and the civil. There's the governance intervention, And then the big one that your committee chair has raised is the issue of contracting and contract management. People think sometimes it's the same, it's not the same. Contracting and contract management are two distinct things. So that would be, and I agree with you, it's a report that must be given by the INTT against their own turnaround strategy and their own intervention plan. On the exit strategy to intervention, I think our view is that this can't be a parachutist thing. We learned hard lessons in the 90s around the intervention in the Eastern Cape. Parachute in, spend there 3 months, 4 months, we parachute out. Parachute syndrome. So what happens then is things doesn't get fixed. So things just slip again. But you're dealing with a difficult period. May is not far, so I don't know how you're gonna juggle that one, because it's quite a hard one on in terms of exit and who takes over and the continuity issue or non-continuity issue around the exit issue. So that would be my comments on it. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Blaikies. I sensitize honourable members, section 102C. The council must, while the intervention continues, review the intervention regularly and may make any appropriate recommendations to the national executive. And that's what we did in our report. We made recommendations. And the IMTT will have to respond to that as well. Yes, they will have to give us a report on all 10 departments, section 101A, and 101B. 1A operates in terms of a directive from the national executive and national departments. Section 101B is a total intervention by the national executive, where those powers are then with the national executive. Honourable members, I want to start concluding because other members want to take flights. Honourable Zwani and Honourable Monakedi, yes?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I was just thinking.
My apologies. I thought he wanted to come in before.
Oh.
Yeah. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Chair.
Short. To the point, please.
Oh.
Chair, thanks. I just wanted to request the Prof to send his input, to send us his input in writing, because we had thought that the details that he's giving, he would have given us before the adoption of the report, because that's a very valuable input, but it should have come in before the adoption of the report. We had a lengthy process where we interacted with all the stakeholders that were there in the visit.
No, this was a committee report. It's not a report by the FFC.
Yeah, but
there's a total difference. The NCOP didn't divert the responsibility to the FFC. But your point is valuable, Professor, and you can assist him. Honourable Zwani and then Honourable Monakedi.
No, thank you, Chair. There is a point that was raised by Honourable Monakedi, and I was just thinking about this point, where in the record it says that the recommendation of the committee, ad hoc committee, said the capital projects must stop and attention is given to maintenance. To me, it doesn't sound right. Maybe the committee meant to say that there has to be a balance between the building of new structures and capital projects as well as the maintenance. And in any case, the new capital projects should go with the maintenance plan. I don't think it would be correct for us to say that the capital projects or building a school or a hospital where there is a dire need must stop and then we attend to maintenance. Maybe the rephrasing of the point, sorry, would be actually necessary. in that regard, Chairperson. Thank you.
Noted. Honorable Monakedi.
Yeah. Fortunately, indeed, in terms of the report as adopted by the House, is that we presented recommendations. So it's not like it's a resolution that have to be, that are hard and fast. We are recommending to the task team to look at, So I'm saying I'm taking, I think I'm satisfied, that that particular concern, which you have just repeated, we can find a way of actually penalizing it as we engage with the task team, So that at the end of the day, we are able to do it exactly as she has reiterated. But I also wanted to thank the professor. I think he was very clinical in terms of dealing with the report. And going forward, I know the proposal was that he should have done whatever, but I think the professor has corrected our official. But going forward, for sure, the official should find a way of tapping into the wisdom, the experience, without transgressing that which is in the law, in the constitution. I just thought we should thank the professor for that intervention. This committee has been established to look into the intervention, to monitor the intervention, and to report on that on a regular basis. And the team that we are required to interact with directly is the task team, not necessarily the provincial administration per se. If we have to interact with the provincial administration, it will be in terms of whether they are actually implementing that which the national government through the task team has directed them as the provincial administration to actually implement, in terms of Section 101A and also B. So I'm responding to what I think Yolanda earlier on raised. And I think that is what the professor reiterated, to say that the administration, the national government, through this intervention, they are the ones who are now in, and we have to actually talk to them in the main to get to understand and to monitor them as to whether those action plans are being implemented or not, and if there are challenges, what are they doing about those? Thank you.
I think one of the main conclusions that the provincial government made and came to when they presented to us on the 27th of June is the fact that they accept the intervention. And the Honourable Premier made that statement, which was a very important statement, because I know something went wrong. Honourable members, thank you. Thank you to the team. Thank you to Professor Plaikies. The way forward is next Tuesday, Wednesday afternoon, 2 o'clock until 6. We will give enough time for presentations, and there will be enough time for deliberations. And then the way forward will be decided after the 6th. That we first listen to the IMTT and measure the progress being made. With these words, I wish you well for the rest of the afternoon and the build-up for the State of the Nation Address for next week, the 7th of February. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.